Bro, that was 46 cuts to make that work. I edited the shit out of that.
Oh, mate, my mind was blown for a second. I was like, there's no way on earth we got that good.
Bro, I had to pitch shift your voice and everything. 1, 2, 3, 4.
There we go. Oh, I'm sad. I really wanted to be that good at timing. That was mate. There we go. Anyway,
it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was once I was done dialing in the intro, I literally just skipped straight to the end and pressed and put the outro music in. I was like, I'm not even going to listen to this. Maybe I cussed, maybe I didn't, but that took way too long.
It was worth it, mate. That if I was listening,
it's
to
worth
this podcast,
it for us.
Yeah, if I was listening,
no one on the Patreon page has ever mentioned like, hey, great count in. No one cares. But we care.
That's why we need the support, mate, because it takes us a week to make the intro. So we can't work on anything else. Do you know what I mean? It's come like we financially on. Need it because we spend a week on the edit.
We're doing our best. Speaking of the people that support this podcast, the great patrons, it is finally time for us to have our much talked about practice pad live lesson with the patrons on Zoom. That is happening this Sunday. So you guys are probably listening to this on Thursday or Friday. That means you have time to become a patron, support this podcast. If we can bring you any kind of joy or mental stability, or if anything, you're just like, well, at least I'm not as messed up as those two cats, then please consider heading on over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie. The link is in the description of this podcast. And please consider supporting us. And then on the Patreon page, you'll get the Zoom invite and you can hang out with us this Sunday at 9 a.m. my time. And that's 5 p.m. your time, right?
Yeah, that's 5 p.m. UK time. Yep.
Okay, well, I expect your hands to be flying by then. Mine are going to be a little more. I got some morning hands at 9 a.m.
Hey, I know. I don't even know. I get so scared of like British summertime or GMT. I just say UK time. Like, what is going on? Yeah. What are we in now? GMT?
I never know. Yeah, like I was setting up a new camera yesterday and it asked, I got to California and I was like, okay, I know I live there. And then it said daylight savings. I was like, I know we do it. I just don't know if we're currently doing it.
Isn't that like an offer you have in Walmart, daylight savings or something?
Exactly.
It sounds like it. My SD cards would drive you insane. Literally, some of them are like dated like 1985. Or like
really?
December at like midnight and it's like July in 2021 even.
I always, when I'm setting up a new camera, I always think like, why would I ever need to set up the date and time? I couldn't care less. Just show me where the record button is. And then I get back to the hotel and I've recorded 3 vlogs and I'm like, well, 1.6 watt and 2699 Sony. I'm assuming that was Manchester.
Yeah, literally. Like,
good luck.
That is my life. I filmed an entire vlog again because I couldn't find the footage. But it was in there. It was just in the middle of like the folder. It just wasn't at the top or the bottom. And crazy.
I got to say, I recently rented a Fuji camera, the Fuji X-T4, I've bought this camera 3 times now, returned it 3 times, and yet I still will see one stupid YouTube video and I'm like, you know what? I got to give that Fuji X-T4 another try for the 4th time. So I rented it and I got to say, compared to Sony, like on Sony and on Canon, when you take the SD card out, put it into your computer, you have to click on about 46 folders to get to your footage. You got to go through thumbnails. You got to go through an advertisement for their new lens.
Yeah.
You have to skip past. I mean, it's unreal. There's coupons in there for Dropbox. But with Fuji, you click on the Fuji folder and then your files are there. That's it. One
so
click.
Beautiful.
And I was like, okay, I really wish I liked your camera more. I love the camera, love the image, but it's finicky and it's just not as fun to use as a Sony or a Canon. I will say what comes out of it is very close to how I edit all my photos. So that part is really appealing. Like take a picture, open it in your computer and you're like, well, that's pretty much how I wish it looked like.
Yeah.
You could get a Sony, a Canon, a Nikon, anything to look like that. It's just more work to do it. Once you have some presets, not too bad. But yeah, it's going back. Once again, I was like, yeah, why do I keep doing this? Like I so badly want it to be you know, I've got the Leica is like my, hey, I'm going out with the campers. I'm going to take some stories and some pics. It's kind of like my intimate camera and it only does photos. I mean, it does video, but I wouldn't use the video features on it. And then I've got my Sonys for video. And then this Fuji just keeps popping up like, well, maybe it's the one. Maybe it does all that by itself. It doesn't.
Mate, it's the same with sneakers. I do it. I'm like, I really want this pair of shoes. And then I get them and they sit in my cupboard. I'm like, yeah, I don't. Who am I? I can't wear that. I can't pull those off. And then I sell them.
At what point in your life did you think that hot pink was going to work for your ankles?
Yeah.
But you still bought them.
And they're low. Very low. And so I'm quite tall and I need to wear a cuffed ankle. It's one of these. And then I sell it. And then I see one picture on Instagram of like someone wearing them. And I'm like, oh my God, they are good. I'm going to get them again. And I'm going to live my best life. And I'm just going to put them on. They arrive and then they go straight in the cupboard again. And then they decrease in value. And I never learned the lesson. I'm still doing it.
And I'm assuming just like with me, with certain, I've done this with watches. When I bought it, it was one price. I sold it. Now I want it back. Now it's more expensive.
Oh, mate. 100.
I'm like, and I'm assuming sneakers have to be that way times 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Because sneakers, like watches, I think they go up in more value, but it takes more time. And then sneakers.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah. Sneakers, like it's like a bubble essentially. So an influencer or Travis Scott can wear them and it's like, bang. Literally overnight, they're like doubled in price. So you've always got this question of like, shall I sell them? Are they going to dip? Yeah, I'll sell them now because they might dip. And then you sell them and then they go up and you're like, mate, if I just waited a month, I would have got like double my money. But there we go. That's the game for you, mate. Anyway.
That's Drum with Mike and Eddie.
Yeah, isn't it? Let's change the subject. Anyway, mate, how was Drum Camp number, what were we on now?
So this was the third one of the year, but it was 103.
How was that? That was the top boys, wasn't it? That was the big boys.
Bro, that was me sending you voice notes being like, can you fly here now? I'm in trouble. Oh my God. It was amazing, but I've never been pushed like that. We always get like in an advanced camp, there's always like one cat where I'm like, at the end of the camp, I can tell that person, hey, you're always welcome back here for the experience and for the camaraderie and the brotherhood and the sisterhood and all that stuff. But you don't ever need, you don't need to sign up for my camp or Benny's camp. You're good. You got this. You need to go make your own mark now.
Yeah.
I've never had 8 of them show up at the same time. I was like, what is this? Like, I remember asking the first dude, I was like, bro, you have like really good feel and touch and like, do you have a private teacher? And he's like, oh yeah, I've had private teachers. And I graduated from Berkeley in 2018. I was like, Berkeley, California or Berkeley School of Music? It's like, Berkeley School of Music. I was like, why are you here?
Yeah.
You're so good. I'm asking you questions.
That's why at that moment in time, that like specific moment in time, that is when I would walk into the toilet, right? Look myself in the mirror, splash myself with cold water and say, look, they're here for you, Eddie. It doesn't matter if they're better than you. Yeah. Right. They're going to learn something. Just be you.
That's basically what those are the messages you were sending me. You were like, dude, you've got this. Just be you. They're there to see. And it wasn't a better or worse thing. It was more like, what are their expectations? Because when you have advanced drummers, my fear is that at that point, their expectation is to learn something even harder than what they can already do. And that is not who I am as a teacher. Like, I would honestly send people to Thomas Lang's boot camp where it's like, this is going to physically push you to the limits of what a human can do on the drum set. That's just not who I am, you know? And I would say that I'm somewhere in between that world and Steve Jordan Pocketland. I'm somewhere in between. But the most important thing is it's more of a, like a life camp where I'm trying to get you to be happy with who you are and where you're headed. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to help you figure all that stuff out. So the cool thing is, as advanced as these cats were, they were also mentally advanced. So a good example of that is I assign something that's kind of difficult to do on the drums. They all get it in 5 minutes, even though we've got an hour for the class. Normally, that would cause me to go in the bathroom and have the movie scene that you just talked about where I splash the water on my face. And I'm like, well, that was an hour's worth of education. They got it in 5 minutes. Luckily, these guys were advanced enough to know getting it is not the thing. Mm-hmm. I expect you to get it. I need you to spend the next 55 minutes making it feel good, yes, finding your own version of it, developing your voice with this content. The content, I didn't invent any of this stuff. This is, you know, this is advanced drumming for sure. But what makes it go from advanced to pro is how it sounds when you play it. That will be the difference between me and you and Steve Jordan and Benny Greb and all of that stuff. And so luckily they were mentally advanced enough to all know that. And none of them felt like they accomplished something when they got down the thing that I assigned. They all felt like, okay, cool, let's get started.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
It's true, actually. Like thinking back to when I've had like one-to-one lessons with people and they've come in and they've just played everything that was ever in my website and they're better than me. And I have that panic. It's so interesting, actually, like thinking back, because you're so right. When you show them something, it's not like, okay, cool. And then what's next? It's like, okay, cool. Well, I'm happy. Right. I'm happy to flip and play this for an hour, mate, if you just sit here and tell me what you do and how you do it. And that's the same. If I have a lesson, I'm happy to play a swing shuffle for an hour straight and just have a little bit of guidance, you know, and just play the drums. Yeah. So it's
interesting. Well, I mean, if we think back to, if we think back to your lesson with Steve White, I can't imagine that you're like, what is that breakthrough fusion pattern you're playing? And he's like, oh, it's called the jazz ride pattern. Instead, it was you going, yeah, I've known that since day one. How come yours sounds so much better than mine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a...
I mean, that's what it always comes down to, is the feel, the touch, the approach. And that's the only thing at that level. We had a kid here from India who was 19, who was truly a savant. Like, you couldn't figure out anything that he couldn't do, even though he had never done any of it. He was like, so what is that? So we even had a situation where I was like, okay, I just want to see where you guys are at mentally with a click. I'm going to put on a click. Here you go. I need you to turn this into the E's and then count yourself in. Everyone was like tapping on their chest and like buggy whipping around and shucking and jiving. And I was like, all right, Sannivas. And after the first snap, he's like, E, and just went. And I was like, what the hell?
Wow.
And I asked him, I said, okay, Sannivas, that's not normal. Like, most people have to do some mental hula hoops to make this happen. Can you please tell the class how you did that? And he just said, I don't know. I just know how to do it. And I was like, okay, get the F out.
Yeah. How dare you, mate?
I've been playing for 40 years, you punk.
Who are you?
Yeah, let's get out.
Get out.
So it was a great week, man. It was a lot of pressure. But I have to say that once I realized, oh, wow, we are in the most advanced camp I've ever taught in over 100 camps. Once we got there, then it was like, well, hell, I haven't spent a full week with drummers of this caliber in a long time. I want to hang out with these guys. I want to take part in this camp. So everything that I assigned to them, I would also make up like a version of it that I had never done. And I was sitting on one of the kits too, practicing it and working out with them. And I would say, okay, guys, it's time to show what you were working on. Here's my variation of what we worked on. And so it was a blast and we just had a really good time. And it was nice to tell a few of the players too, hey, it's time you should have endorsements. You should be hosting your own camps. You're there. You're absolutely there.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that a lot of people have to make the jump to is the mental acceptance that they're professional drummers.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing.
It is a tough thing.
Cause you almost need someone else to validate it for you. You need like a gig that says I'm a pro drummer because I have this gig or because I'm doing this thing. And it's tough because you can't, you know, I mean, with Lower Than Atlantis, it wasn't like, if you keep doing this, you'll achieve a level. It was like luck and timing. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I'm a signed drummer with endorsements. Yeah, it happened overnight.
Even now, I never consider myself a professional drummer. It's weird, isn't it? I think there's a few drummers out there who like,
you don't even have to work on time. That's how good you are.
I'm never going to live that down, am I? Ever gonna live that down?
Because you're so sick. It's like double a double whammy, bear trap. Babe. You step with one foot, and then you step in the other one.
I'm gonna bring the third sometime soon, and then end it at a third.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it's weird, isn't it? You just, because I think there's a few drummers or musicians or people who just like think, yeah, I'm the dog's bollocks. I am amazing. Do you know what I mean? But I think the most of us, 99.9% of drummers just think, yeah, I'm not that good. I'm whatever. And I think that's why camps are so cool, because even if someone is amazing, technically gifted and just and a legend on the drum kit, they don't see themselves like that. They just want to get in a room with other drummers and play the drums. So it doesn't matter.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Especially yeah, after absolutely. Lockdown. And do you know what I mean? I would give my right arm to be in a room with amazing drummers, learning, doing things, sitting outside like you did. I saw that video you put up on your story of everyone having a note from the... an E, and or an R or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, mate, you know, even if you could do that, it's still fun. It's still wicked. Do you know what I mean?
It was so easy to think of, but all of a sudden we're just guys, like each person is screwing it up. You know, that little video is 15 seconds of something that took us probably 30 minutes to get down because, I mean, I was on the downbeats and I messed it up.
It's hard. It's really hard.
I was so concentrated on everybody else. I was like, E and up to E and up. And the to eat and the oh biscuits, but you know, and so and I, all of a sudden you're clapping like a really white guy where you don't know how to clap anymore.
Yeah.
You like separate your hands really fast.
Yeah,
and your fingers
are
all sprawled out,
and you're like shocked was, by your own but, noise.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I caught a fly. Woo. And so, but that's what it is all about. And like you said, I think that because of lockdown and everything, people are just happy to be in that environment. And in all honesty, the kid from Berkeley did say, his name's Aaron, but Aaron did say, like, because he's a pro drummer in the Bay Area gigging, he's there.
Yeah.
But he was like, honestly, I was kind of getting depressed and I just missed the environment I had at music, or, you know, at college where I just jammed with people and we spread ideas around. So he was almost saying like, look, I don't need you to reinvent the wheel here. I just need this time to be around other drummers. And so we had a great time. The campers were amazing. I've got another camp showing up in 2 days.
Oh, flipping hell, mate. You're nonstop. You are nonstop.
Never ends.
I bet
never
that match ends. Is but, coming in handy now, isn't it?
I just snorted. I really want like a cop to walk in and see me with like three lines and a rolled up $100 bill. And he's like, okay, hands behind your back. And I'm like, why don't you test that? That's ground up tea leaves, pal.
Yeah.
He's like, stop rubbing it on your gums.
And then he's like, oh, can I have a bit? I've got a night shift to come.
Can I get in on that? I'm like, yep, just get your own bill. All right, let's get into your last couple of weeks, because as busy as I've been, you were bonkers busy. And it was pure chaos. It was so fun to be on the journey with you. For our listeners that don't know, you got asked to fill in for the drummer of Youngblood, and it was not a pub gig.
No.
And so here's what I want to know. Like, we will get all the way to the end and to the pyro. Let's just state that. It ended with pyro. Pyrotechnics, fire, balls of fire. Yeah. That's what it ended with. Youngblood is an amazing artist. I found out about him through that song that Travis did.
That's a banger. That is a very good... With Machine Gun Kelly.
With Machine Gun Kelly. That was the first time I'd ever seen him or heard of him. That was probably 2 years ago. And then I started following him, got really into his music and everything. So I was already a fan. You give me the call and it's just the typical, mate, I just got a call. And you're kind of tripping. And then from there, we were on a journey. So tell me what happened. How did it all go down?
Mate, it's Monday sort of morning, and I get a call from one of my mates called Ben, who used to tech for LTA, my band, and text for Youngblood. And he's Youngblood's called Dom, so he's Dom's really good mate. And he gave me a call, and already, you know, I didn't have his number saved. And I picked up the phone, and he was like, "You all right, it's Jackson." I was like, "You all right, mate?" And already in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you're calling me? And you never call me. What's going on here? And I know he works with Youngblood very closely, and that's his main gig. So I already had that sort of like thing in my head. And then he said, you know, had a little catch up. How's it been? I said, yeah, it's been cool. You know, just like playing drums, but not overdoing it. Just maintaining that fun at the minute. You know, not much is going on, and you know, I don't really have to practice for anything. And then he said, well, you might have to practice for something now. How do you feel about playing for Youngblood this weekend? I didn't mention Reading and Leeds because I'd forgotten Reading and Leeds by this point.
Sure.
And I was like, all right, but when do you need me for? And he was like, Wednesday. So this is Monday morning. And I was like, all right, so what's the situation? And then he listed it out. So Wednesday was rehearsal, like a half, it was a full day, but we only really did half-ish, like half a day kind of thing. I think we ran the set twice maybe. And then Thursday show, Friday show, Saturday show, Sunday show. So four shows. And then he said Reading and Leeds. And I was like, oh, of course, it's Reading and Leeds weekend. Like, right. Wow. Okay, what's the slot? And then he said, it's main support on the main stage. So that's a big slot. Very, very big slot.
Yeah.
I've only done fourth on the main stage. And this was like, you know, second to last. So it's a big slot. And I, at this point, I'm sort of panicking, being like, all right, how many songs? And he said 12. And I'm like, all right. So
Ooh. So
I was like, right, okay. Yeah, all right, let's do it. And then all of a sudden, it was like hitting a wall. I was like, no, I can't. I can't do it because Rona's away. My mum's away. Rona's mum is at work. And I was with Travis the entire weekend. Just me and him.
Oh my God.
And I was like, mate, I can't do it. I'm going to have to like think of someone else and send you some names. And then I said, hang on, let me just like see what's going on. So anyway, long story short, on that Monday, I went into town, got my hair cut, trying to figure out how to do this. Rona was working, so I couldn't speak to her. My mom couldn't do it and Rona's mom couldn't do it this time. And I was like, oh my God, mate, I'm going to have to say no. Eventually around 1 to 2 p.m., I called Ben and said, I can do it. We've made it work. Travis is going up to Scotland and staying with Rona's mum. She's taking some time off work, so I can do it. Cool. I'll send you the set list. Let's get learning the songs. I was like, all right, sweet. So
this is still on Monday.
This is still on Monday, about sort of 3 o'clock now, probably. So
we're getting deep into the day and yeah. Rehearsals on Wednesday.
And at this point, I was filming a video for the sneaker stuff with Luke, which I had planned and couldn't move.
Okay.
So I'm filming this video, talking about sneakers. In the back of my head, just thinking, fuck, literally like, I can't be doing this. Like, I cannot be doing this right now, Luke. Like, I can't be talking about sneakers when I know I've got 12 songs to learn and I'm playing main stage Reading and Leeds and I'm going to have a day to do it. So we bang this sneaker stuff out. And I say to Luke, I'm sorry, mate. Like, I'm going to be off the grid for the next couple of days. I've got a lot of stuff to learn. And to be honest, mate, to be 100% transparent, I was freaking out a little bit. I haven't played a gig in 2 years. I haven't played in drums in front of anyone in a long time. And it was just constant pressure of like, this constant thought of, okay, this is a very, very important gig for Youngblood, for the crew, for everyone. And this is going to be my first gig. Like this is a bit mental right now. And I don't know. I know
it would be mental if you had 2 weeks, let alone a day and a half.
Yeah. And at this point, I was like, okay, I know I think I'm okay. That tune, the one that you're talking about, I really like that song.
Yeah.
I've listened to that a lot and it's quite a simple structure. So I was like, I know that one. I don't know anyone else.
So it's 1 out of 12.
I don't know any other songs. So then I come home to, I have to come home to do something quick. And then I go back to the studio that night. So I sit in the studio until probably 9 p.m. I have a couple of hours just to sit through the tunes.
Yep.
Tuesday, I come back, I get to the studio for like 9 a.m. and I sit there and I probably left about 10 o'clock at night. So I did 9 till 10.
Really?
But I came back for dinner and I put Travis to bed and it was just a process of play through the songs. And like the way I do it is I never repeat a song. So it's weird. So the 12 songs, I would do the first song and then move on to the second. Even if I made a mistake, I'd move on to the second song and then I'd move on to the third song. Just to see when I come around how much is stuck in my brain. And also as well, like, I don't know about you, but if I over obsess with a song and it gets to the point where I'm looping it, I get kind of lazy and I stop thinking in certain parts and then that makes a mistake. And then I start doubting myself. Yep. Oh, I don't know it, but I do. I'm just getting bored of it essentially because I'm overdoing it. So I just repeated the set as many times as possible. Whenever I went out in the car to get a drink or whatever, I just had it on loop. And then just kept on playing. I didn't make any notes, just mental notes. And then, so this is Tuesday. And then about 10 p.m., I stop and I pack down my kit. I've got to take everything to the rehearsal room to meet the boys.
That's a scary moment when you start packing down the kit, because that means no more practice.
Yeah, it was, man. Right. And like the whole time throughout this Tuesday, I'm like, yeah, I really can't think about what I'm doing here. Like I couldn't think about it, even though I was. And I was lying in bed that Tuesday night just thinking, yeah, I've got this down.
And this is what I do.
Yeah, and I called Ben, the drummer, lovely guy, Ben Sharp, amazing drummer, wicked drummer. Everyone go follow him on Instagram. And unfortunately, he had an impinged nerve, I think either in his like right shoulder or his back or something, but it affected his arm. So he couldn't feel a few of his fingers and he was in real pain. And he spoke to me and there was a few electronic parts and stuff like that. So I spoke to him about those. Anyway, so Tuesday's done. Wednesday morning, I go to the rehearsal room in London, set up my kit. The MD, who is also a friend of mine, who has also MD'd Dua Lipa before. So we're good friends. I work well with him. We sat down and we did a couple of the tracks, just me, while the crew is setting up. So I'm playing whilst the crew is setting up all the guitars and everything. I'm playing just with the MD, going through the tracks. He's telling me like, oh, this bit does that. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, I thought that. Oh, this stops on the four or not the one. Or all these little things. I'm like, okay, cool. Just repeat that ending for me, whatever it may be. And then luckily, I said to him, like, I'm going to 100%, I'm going to need to do some vocal cues for my own ears. I'm going to have to, mate, because it's weird. Part of me felt like I was almost, like, it was a bit of a cop-out doing that. But I said to him, like, I've got a day with 12 songs, like finishing on the one as opposed to the four in front of like 50,000 whatever people is a bad move.
Yeah.
Like, I just need that. I just need that little reminder in my ear. Okay, Eddie, finish on the floor. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, bah, instead of finishing completely out of time. So that was good. So the rehearsal day looked like this. So yeah, I was sat down with the MD. We were playing whilst the crew was setting up. And then I would do one take. And then I would sit next to him and I would run the track and I would do any cues that I thought I would need. So they were live versions of the songs anyway, a lot of them were. So there was a lot of like repeated sections for the crowd to interact and then stops for the crowd to interact. So on those bits, I would be like, okay, Eddie, crowd interaction, stop, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And so do you just run that, or you record your voice saying that, that's going to play through your in-ears along with the click?
Yeah,
how does that show up on the right time?
Yeah, along with the click. So I would sit down and it was another way for me to essentially have another run through of the track and really test my knowledge of the track. So I said to Trude, the MD, let me record cues, but just press record and I'll cue it as if I'm playing it, sort of thing. So I would look at the track as I'm cueing it and I would say, okay, there's a stop coming up, stop 2, 3, 4. And I was getting them right because I was obsessing. And that was like a really good way because that helped me visualize the music as well. Because I saw it in Ableton, so I could see the stops. And when I was playing, that helped me memorize it. Some of the cues I did they were weird. They were really, really weird. Like there was one bit that I did and I'm like taking the piss. I'm like joking. I'm like, okay, Eddie, don't fuck up. Keep on playing, mate. Keep on playing. Like literally in my ears. That's what I had.
Shut up.
So I'm like playing and I'm like, what did I say? And I'm like, did I say stop? No, I didn't. I'm just taking the piss. Like little things like that. So I actually removed a few. But anyway, so that's what that day looked like. I would sit down, one take with the MD, one take recording cues. And then I played with Adam, the guitar player. And I think we did that twice, I think.
Okay.
So that was a long day. Got back fairly late. And then the next day, there was a show for Samsung, which was like a corporate thing. Shorter set. So that was a nice sort of, show that eases into like the full set. It was like four songs. And then the day after was Leeds. So that was the full set.
Wow.
Which was cool. Which was a good laugh. And Ben came to watch, the drummer. He actually came to watch. And
oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, and
That's an awkward situation.
It is, mate. And because I just said to him, like, you haven't got anything to worry about here, mate. I'm not fishing for the gig. I'm not trying to do anything. That's not, this is your thing. I'm just here to help you out. Because he actually recommended me to
That's really everyone. Cool.
Yeah, really cool. He's a fucking wicked drummer, man, and really cool guy. And so that was cool. You know, I was like, I said to him, like, give me some good vibes, side stage, you know what I mean? Like vibe out, you know, because I at that point I was like, in my head, smash this one. And then you've got another show tomorrow, Manchester, before Reading, the biggest one, essentially.
Okay. Yeah.
And Leeds went well. Leeds went well. I was a bit stiff in a few songs, just because I was a bit like, okay, I don't want to be overthinking. And when you think like that, you overthink. It's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
It was like, I really wanted to get into the mindset of just enjoy it and play. And I would say within the second or third song, I didn't think about anything from there.
Okay.
There on out. And the gig is it's a visual one, you know, like you got to rock out, you got to hit hard, you got to play. I can't be sat at the back totally. Going verse in 3-2. You know what I mean? I would stick out like a sore thumb.
Totally.
And I was actually very surprised at how relaxed I was after that second song. I really enjoyed it, loved it. And then Manchester, the day after, it was a gig for Pride. I really enjoyed that. Really, really enjoyed that because me and Adam, the guitar player, could interact because I forgot to mention at Leeds Festival, there was a massive like 30 foot, 40 foot, whatever it was, blow up red duck. I don't know if you saw it in the pictures.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, there was a huge inflatable duck, basically. This massive thing. So at Leeds, we didn't have much room. So I actually couldn't see Adam, the guitar player, unless he walked to the other side of the stage. So at Leeds, it felt like I was playing on my own, mate, in front of like 50,000 gotcha. People or whatever, which was a weird one.
Oh my gosh.
Manchester, we could see each other and we sort of gelled and all the bits in between the set, which are really important because it's very like, you know, there's a lot of like crowd interaction. It's very old school in that sort of sense between songs where it's like, it's kind of a lot of improvisation, you know, stabs.
The music never stops. It's just in between. It's just a song or it's not a song.
But yeah.
Yeah.
And those things aren't planned out. You can't plan them out. You know, like someone will just say, you know, he likes to, you know, Youngblood likes to do a few bits in between songs and just follow. And you're like, okay. And and then Leeds, I saw how he did stuff, you know, like just shaking his hands and then lifting them up. So I'm just like,
right.
Bow, bow, bow. Just watching and learning and just doing it and just figuring it out as you go. And that's why after that gig, I was like, okay, I get it. I get like the in-between bits, which you can't rehearse and you can't plan. And I feel good. So Manchester was good. And then Reading, I felt really comfortable. I actually really, really enjoyed that show, man. Like I enjoyed all of them.
That's pretty cool.
But Reading was just like, yeah, it was. I was actually really surprised at myself for how comfortable I was. You know, I think there's. Have you ever heard of Parkinson's law?
Nope.
I might be explaining this terribly, and I might not do it justice. But Parkinson's law is essentially, from what I understand, you know, when you're in school and you get given coursework or homework, you get given like 2 months to do it. But most of us will do it the night before and still get the same result.
Yes.
And it's this thing, it's this thinking of what you can achieve when you just focus on one thing intensely in a shorter period of time, as opposed to diving in and out over a longer period of time. Do you see what I mean? And it was like
100%.
When that Tuesday, basically, essentially after I hung up the phone and said, yeah, I can do it to my mate Ben, that was all I thought about. Literally all I thought about. I didn't go on social media. I wasn't texting anyone apart from you and, you know, a few other people. It was all I was thinking about. And it's crazy what you can achieve when you do that.
Yeah.
When you just give your brain.
Well, and even your voice notes to me were only about those songs. So you were still obsessing on it. You were just like, well, I have to take a break off the drums. So I'm going to go talk to Mike about these songs.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't think I've ever been that stoked for another human being throughout that whole week. Like I was so excited for you. And I know that this lockdown and this last 2 years has been really tough on you because it stole away from you part of who you are. And like, it was a lot easier for me than it was for you because I don't tour with a band. I don't, you know, I just sit in a room and make videos and I still was able to do what brings me the most joy. I was able to do it all the time. Then we added this podcast to the mix which was has never once felt like something we had to do. I couldn't wait to do it. So I was always on this high, but I knew that you were like missing part of who you are. And so when you got that call, I mean, I don't know if I've ever dropped that many all caps F-bombs in text. I was so stoked for you. And I was like, dude, just send me pictures. And even if it seems egotistical, send me videos, pics. Just, I want you to have the best time of your life. And it was just so cool to like see it in two ways. Cause I got to see it through you, through our, you know, private communication, but I also got to see it through social media, through the social media lens of like, okay, now he's reposting a professional picture, but he also sent me, you know, his own phone shot. And so it was really cool to see all that happen. But I also, man, I never once was nervous for you. I had so much faith in like, you are seriously one of the best drummers in the world at doing what you do. And so my thought was more like, these cats have no idea what they're in for, because they're thinking, we got some cat to try to learn 12 songs in a day and a half. This is going to be rough. It's too bad this is happening. And I knew that by the end, they would be like, that was amazing. And like you said, it took you a couple songs to be you. What I think is probably also going on is, how long does it take Youngblood to be Youngblood with you on drums? How long does it take the guitarist to be the guitarist with you on drums? And I'm sure they were all stoked that they actually got to perform Leeds and Reading and the show in Manchester as themselves, rather than like this kind of tentative version where they're constantly checking in on the drummer.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And constantly giving you a heads up, like, we stop here,
Yeah.
You're like, I got it, you know.
Exactly, mate. It's a good point, mate. I appreciate it as well, man. And I think that's, I realized a few things over that week. One of them was, you know, this is when you should really like try to figure out what drummer you are and what you enjoy playing. Because I tell you what, that like that shines through, and that means so much when it comes to things like that, when it comes to pressure, when it comes to just getting the job done and getting the job done well. You know, like if this was a pop gig and it was loads of gospel chops, I wouldn't have done it as well. But there was this thing of like, you know, like I know I can do it. And I can.
You're good at doing
and
that.
And I can do it and make, like you said, make them realize no one's, you know, like nothing has happened, nothing's gone wrong. You know, like and put on a show and bring a certain vibe to it, and you know, make sure that Ben, the drummer, isn't sat at home thinking, "Oh, mate, what's going on? Like this is terrible," and having sleepless nights. You know, and it was and it was wicked. Like it, yeah, like you said, man, it was a nice thing to have after lockdown. You know, it was a bit of a weird one, because at the same time I felt awful for Ben. You know, that was his, like, that was, you know, that was Reading and Leeds, that was going to be his gig.
That's the big stuff.
Yeah, but I said to him, mate, you're going to be doing stadium soon, mate, so don't worry about that. But it was just a weird one. You know, at the same time I wanted to, you know, post loads of videos and pictures, but it's one of those things where I'm like, you know, it's his gig, not mine, and I don't want to be that guy.
Right, but you have to be respectful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I was really happy with it, man. It was mental to think about what I actually just did. Like normally I'm quite humble when when it comes to drums. I'm very humble, right? But call me arrogant for saying this, I fucking smashed it. I absolutely smashed it, because like, it's what I do, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like all those shitty gigs in pubs playing punk rock music is like, it just goes to show every single gig counts for something, you know? Like after I got home, mate, I was so exhausted. I was just so fucked. Cause,
oh, I can't even imagine. I mean, you must have been like so exhausted that you can't sleep. Like you're too tired to sleep.
It was like, and breathe. I did it. You know, and it was crazy, but it was just really cool to be like, okay, man, I'd like I was saying to the boys the whole time, I just want to play well for you lot. You know, this is your career. You're just starting out. You're going to go on to bigger and better things. And this is Reading and Leeds. And you're still going to go on to like doing bigger shit. And I just want to play well for you guys. You know what I mean? And that was my priority. So that's why I wanted to smash it. I've smashed it because I'm a good drummer. I wanted to smash it because I wanted the people who asked me to do it and called me up to be like, yeah, I knew, that's why I called him.
Yeah, because I think that there's so much more of that in your future, which is like, And even Ben probably knew, like, this isn't Eddie's big break. He's already here. He doesn't need this as like, well, if I do good, maybe they'll kick out their drummer. You know, it's more like, if I do good, maybe they'll ask me to do, maybe the MD will be on another gig and ask me to do this thing for this pop artist or this other rock thing. And there's nothing wrong with knowing, like, look, I may not be able to operate on hearts and I may not be able to teach physics, but I can do this, you know? And I think that we all have to find that thing. Like, if I'm on an airplane and somebody says, a man's just had a heart attack, I don't have the ego to raise my hand and be like, I got this. But if somebody on that same airplane said, we cannot figure out the difference between metric modulation and implied metric modulation, I would raise my hand on that airplane and say,
yeah,
I got this. I can do this better than anyone in the plane. Let me handle it. I mean, and when you got that call, I knew, like, dude, he's got this. This is what he does.
And there was a part of me, and I it's weird, mate, because, you know, you always want to, you know, it's been 2 years since I played a gig. You know, I like through, I would say probably halfway through lockdown, I was, I think every musician and every drummer was sort of doubting everything and trying to figure out how or why they were going to continue doing this and what is the reasoning behind it. When I got the call, I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. And right. I was like, yeah, but I need to make it happen. And it's weird. Like when I'm sure everyone has a moment like this in their life, but there's a when these moments sort of come up, you kind of want to not be able to do it because the pressure and the reality of
takes all the pressure off of you.
The reality of
I wish I could.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you get that satisfaction because you've been called over someone else. So you're like, oh, sweet. Yeah, that sort of massages my ego to a certain extent. Not that I care about that at all, but do you know what I'm saying? And then you don't
actually, it validates you.
Yeah, but then you don't actually have to go into battle with a gun. You can just sit at home and go, right. Well, it could have been me. Could have been me. So
they did call me to rescue the troops. I'm just busy.
Yeah, exactly. And there's that weird mentality of like, I just, I kind of want an excuse not to do this. And I had one, but I was like, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to make it happen and just figure it out. And that's why when I say I smashed it, I was like, okay, to myself, I was like, this is why I play the drums. This is why I've spent my entire life practicing and playing every show under the sun in front of two people. You know, this is why I do it because, you know, yeah.
It must feel nice to deliver on the hype. I mean, there is hype. You have a large social media following. You and I have a podcast called Drum with Mike and Eddie. And so it's like, well, I'm assuming he's good, but no one has seen you play a gig since we started this podcast.
Yeah.
Because there haven't been any. We started it during lockdown. So it's to deliver on that hype and that promise and just go, no, I really can do this. Like it's a cool thing, man. And I was so, so happy for you the whole way through, especially once the last show was over and you made it through all four shows, the rehearsals, learning 12 songs. And it was like, cool, this little thing is done. Just take a breath. I was really stoked. So I have one question before we get to our listener questions that have nothing to do with any of this, but you just experienced like some massive, massive shows with a level of artists that's, you know, maybe not the same thing as Busted, but definitely on a more pro level than where LTA stopped, you know, as far as like pyro and I mean, you're doing Reading, you know, main support. So did it make you want to have a gig like this full time where you're constantly touring 300 days a year?
Yeah, no, I can't do that anymore, mate. I don't think. And that's, it's a weird, this is what I was saying. Who else? I was saying it to a few people. I think I was saying it to the MD, you know, he was like, so where are you out of touring? What do you want to be doing? And I'm like, I love this. And I'm forever thankful and grateful that people ask me to do these things, mate. And you know, I'm so happy for everyone that this is going amazingly well. And like, I'm just at a different point in my life where I'm like, I've got things at home. I've got family now. I've set things up here. I love teaching. I like making these video lessons and the video content. And I like to be able to have, you know, this podcast. When you're on tour, even that, which was a week, I think I was away for it. Well, even less than that. it's like, you can't do anything else, mate.
No, it's
and
over.
I'm not slagging off people who tour, because like when you, if touring is what you want to be doing, that is the perfect situation. But like trying to sort out a podcast with you on the road, could you imagine? It's like, oh, I've got.
No. That's why we recorded one a week early, and then we had to like miss almost 4 days because my camp and your, you know, your touring life for those 4 to 5 days, it was tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and not to mention you and I are separated by 3,000 miles. So our time difference is always difficult. And so we're trying to figure out like, all right, what time do you get off of, you know, what time do you get off the Manchester stage? And then expecting you to be able to handle yourself in a podcast for an hour after being completely drained is impossible. Expecting you to concentrate on a podcast leading up to the show is impossible. So
yeah,
it's not, you know, it's crazy, but I just knew that like getting that opportunity, it also just kind of scratches an itch of like, okay, cool. Like I can still do this and I still have this as an option. And I know when I quit touring full time, it definitely was one of those things that I still did quite a bit of pickup gigs, nowhere near the size of what you just did, but I would do like a run of 7 days with a certain band or whatever. And it was nice to know that I could dip my toe in that world. But when I did get those offers for it to be full-time, it's like, no. I mean, the other thing, you know, I was trying to build a teaching business, but you also have a successful sneaker business, which is, I know that you're passionate about it because you talk to me a lot about it. So it's not something where you're like, well, if drumming doesn't work out, I'll do this. It's like, you're equally as passionate about that whole world and you're crushing it doing that. So imagine trying to do that while being out on tour nonstop. Yeah.
You know? And with an artist like Youngblood, who is just absolutely killing it. Like you, yeah. it's a different,
this is his moment.
Yeah, it's a different kettle of fish.
He has to attack.
Yeah, and it's like you're going to be away like 12 months of the year. And it's wicked. You know, it makes me sound quite picky, but that's why Busted for me is perfect. Not only are we like really, really good mates. I love them. I love the music. I love working with them. But it's just so perfect for me. It's like there's enough touring, there's enough shows, but then there's enough of like home life and doing things at home. And it's that balance. And I guess when I say those things out loud, it makes me realize how fortunate I am to be able to like do those things. When I think about my life, I'm like, oh mate, I'm, you know, living the dream like you. You're living the dream that you always wanted to do and it makes you happy. But yeah, there's a few artists that are like on that very, they're not even on the top level. They're above that top level. And Youngblood is one of them where you say yes, you're a part of that tornado and it's a very amazing, exciting tornado, but like get your suitcase ready sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing,
Like,
I know millions of people that would, you know, jump at that opportunity, but you know, I'm 31 now. Not that ages has really anything to do with it, but like I said, like the same as you,
it's just mentally, you know, I mean, you have to do what you want to do. And I think that the life you have with, you know, Paragon, with your family life and with Busted and with your teaching, it's like you have a really well-balanced professional career. And when you get those opportunities, like the Youngblood gig, you know, even though it was just for a week, when you get those opportunities, you get to see like, there's no way you can be on that stage and in those rehearsals and not at least think, do I want to do this full time again? And it's like, okay, you can, but there is no more. Sorry, Luke. You're on your own, bud.
yeah.
You know, he's doing the sneaker thing on his own and there's no podcast. And honestly, it's a very different world. I'm sure you went through with LTA, but I went through it a lot with the roadies where they would see their kids and their kids had grown a lot since the last time they saw them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I know who you are as a father and I know how important being there for Travis is. So
yeah.
Anyways, it's a dream for a lot of people. I'm glad you got the chance to do it. And I knew you'd smash it. Yeah, I'm really proud of you, man.
Mate, and I must
say... Well, you ready to get to two... go ahead.
Sorry, mate. I just do want to say to all the listeners, because Ben might be listening to this, actually. I reckon he will be. I just want to shout Ben out because, you know, when like you see a drummer play for an artist and you're like, yeah, you bring something that is like not just ticking the boxes. You bring an extra sort of like sauce and you fucking smash it. Ben is that guy and he's an amazing, amazing drummer. So check him out. His Instagram is Ben Sharp, SHARP drums. Ben Sharp drums.
Awesome.
He is the Youngblood drummer. Go check him out. He's a Meinl guy.
He's a Meinl guy.
And he follows you, mate. He follows you. Yep. He follows you.
Oh. Well, yep. I know that. Me and Ben. You know what? I'm gonna check him out. Because maybe I follow him. But
he's an amazing drummer,
I think,
man.
That fucking cool, there is bro. Something to be said for, I know that every time I toured, you know, in support of bigger acts, I always thought there's no one in the world that could play in that band as well as that person.
Yeah.
There's lots of better drummers out there. If you want to get into that world, but like seeing Brad Wilk with Rage, Ben Sharp.
Yeah.
Oh, look at him.
Mate, he's a as you would say.
Oh, bro, you're nowhere near as good looking as he is.
A cat.
He's a handsome lad.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
he's the real deal.
You are fucking smashing it.
Good amount of sit-ups per day.
But
he had nothing to worry about with your ugly ass.
Everyone go follow him. Everyone go follow him, mate. Because like I said before, mate, you know, it's an not awkward one, but like I'm always very conscious of the fact I want everyone to know, like, I'm not that guy. I'm not sniffing around. I'm not like, you know, trying to do shit that is shady or anything like that. And I think that was important for him to know. And I think, you know, I just wanted to put that out there into the ether that, you know.
Ether. Well, I've known since day one that you were a self-made dude. And, you know, all the way back to our original joke on this podcast about you being a hustler, it was that type of hustle that attracted me to your personality, which is hustle for yourself. Yes, I will scrap and fight, but I'm not stealing anything.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to come back to me and say, like, you screwed over a lot of people on the way to where you are. I don't, and I've known since day one, like I said, you would scrap and fight for yourself, but not at the expense of somebody else. So, and you told me that day one. I mean, when we first talked about this, I was like, oh my God, so what's going on with their drummer? And you're like, he's got a pinched nerve. He is their drummer. I'm not replacing him. And this is like before you even had a rehearsal with them.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah.
I'm just, you know, going to fill in and if anything, make him feel as comfortable as possible. And I'm sure you did that.
Yeah,
so,
man.
All right, well, let's get into some of our, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, well, like,
sorry, Adam Stanley. You're never going to get your questions read or answered.
I know you would be the same in this situation. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, you've been asked to help out and, you know, obviously you want to talk about it and people want to ask you questions about it. But at the same time, you feel, you know, you don't want to, you know, I know you would be the same.
So of course. I think we've all experienced that as sports fans is like, you know, our teams in America, the coaches always say, well, you can't lose your job to injury. And it's like, but he just did because the rookie played better and now you just shipped him off to a new team. Well, there were some other issues that we can't talk about. And I'm like, no, the rookie played better than your starter and now the starter's gone. And so I think that we all have to kind of do that. And I mean, if Ben had your dream gig, then it would be different. I think that you could honestly tell him, hey man, I just want to help out and I'm stoked for this opportunity. And then I'm back to, you know, my life and you'll have this back. So let's just hope that he heals well and that he can do this gig for the rest of time. So, all right, let's get into some questions. We have two questions from Adam Stanley just because we had a little backlog. So let's listen to the first one.
Hello, Michael and Edward. Adam Stanley here from Watford. How are you? My question is no great deep, profound thought this week, but really, what is your favorite drum hack, whether it's to do with gear or playing or whatever, that you learned early on that you still just love or get a kick out of today? And maybe that you feel, I don't know, that gives you joy to pass on to other players, like younger players. My favorite one is where you have two sticks and you use them to loosen nuts. That sounds great. to loosen, you know, especially on like kick drum spurs, for example, they always seem to get locked up. And I always remember seeing a friend of mine, she finished her gig and was using the butt end of a stick to hammer the kick drum spur loose. And I walked up and I said calmly, "Nay, young Padawan, grasp two sticks like a spanner and utilize the torque and never ever bash your hand again." And the look on her face was priceless. And so that is my favorite drum hack. And I was just wondering if you have anything similar.
That's such a good drum hack.
That is such a good drum hack.
And I've done that so many times, especially with like cheaper like cymbal stands. And I can't get them loose. I can't get them tight enough. They keep moving.
Yeah.
And so I just grab those two sticks, put around it, and dial it in. Do you have a drum hack?
I don't, mate. I can't. I know as soon as this podcast ends, I'm going to think of one. I can't think of one. Do you have one?
I would say probably the cotton balls in my toms. Okay. I always have, like, because that's something that every time I do a clinic, they're like, so what did you need the bag of cotton balls for? I'm like, oh, I put them in my toms so I don't have to have tape all over the top of my drums. So I usually put about 15 cotton balls in my floor tom, about 12 in my rack tom. And then what happens is you hit the drum, the cotton balls jump up in the air for a second, and then they land on the bottom head and mute it. So it's almost like a gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it lets the drum breathe and then it shuts it down. And so I've been doing that probably almost as long. I would say that hack came to me after the tinfoil in the bass drum Metallica hack when I was like 8. So I think that's kind of it. I mean, really what's weird is as time has gone on, my drumming has just become so like carefree when it comes to the gear because of all of the clinic tours that you just have to sit down and play. So I don't really, it's like, whatever it is fine. You know, I think that we all have to get to a point where we just make it work. And I'm trying to think of something that's happened. I guess the only other hack I've ever done is I always am the guy that forgets his drum rug every time. I never realized that that's my responsibility.
I had to hire in a drum
rug. Bring a drum rug
for this run. Honestly, mate, I had to hire in drum cases, a drum rug, and what else was there? Oh, and a couple of Zildjians for a stacker. Yeah, because I was like, I can do it. Yeah, no worries. And then when I was packing down my gear, I was chatting to Fred, the drum tech. He's like the fucking funniest guy ever. And I was like, yeah, mate, a few things. We're going to have to get on the phone to John Henry's, who's like a rental company distribution.
Yeah, I know it is.
Yeah, yep. John Henry's. I was like, we're going to have to get on the phone to John Henry's. I need drum rug. I need drum cases. I need a couple of extra cymbals. I need some drum skins. I need everything, mate. I've been playing in a storage container for 2 years, mate. I haven't re-headed in about literally 2.5 years.
Oh, he's like, well, then we'll just rent a kit.
Yeah, we'll just get another drummer.
I never have a rug, and I always show up to places that only have like tile floors. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I always take 2 1/4-inch cables, like guitar cables, and I make a loop of them, and then I gaff tape those to the ground, and those become my bass drum spur anchors. So nice. Just 2 loops, and it just makes this place that my bass drum can't move in front of. And so that's kind of the only, because if my bass drum will stay still, nothing else is going to move. That's the only thing that runs away from me.
Yeah.
But other than that, no other cool hacks.
Mate,
you want to get to Adam's second question, or do you got one?
No, I haven't got one. I haven't got one. I've let the team down. Sorry.
Great answer. Here's the second one.
Hello, Mike and Eddie. Adam from Watford here. On today's topic about time, my question is, were you rushing or were you dragging? No, but my question really is about... is it worse to go along with a faster tempo set by another bandmate, or do you just crank that thing down to the tempo where you know it's going to sit at the expense of spoiling a few bars of the song? I mean, I'd probably do the latter, but I'd like to hear your thoughts. I'm going to tell you the most cover band-tastic story possible. So this weekend, and my guitarist always does this, it's, yes, you guessed it, Mr. Brightside by The Killers. He always starts it off about... So if I had to come in, which I have tried to do on several occasions, and play this song, it's really quite a physically uncomfortable thing to do. You know what I mean? It's like, not that I can't play a song at that tempo, but that song at that tempo... it's horrible to do. I don't know. It just doesn't feel good. You know, some of the fills don't come out properly, shit like that. On the flip side of it, when we play Highway Star by Deep Purple, it's quite fast, but it's got a kind of relaxed feel to it because Ian Pace, I only realized today, is playing quarter notes. and not eighth notes, like I've been trying to play at full speed. And then the guitarist in question has asked me to slow it down. So now the eighth notes are comfortable to play, but the song overall, I feel, lacks that kind of adrenaline kick. So I'm trying to like speed it up, but in a different way, because there's always that point where, depending on what the signature groove or feel or pocket of a song is, eighth notes and quarter notes, there's like a comfort thing. And it's not about being lazy. It's just about what actually sounds good and makes everything mesh together. Like, you don't have to like...
All right. So, great question. we're running out of time. I'm about to pee my pants. I guess the real question is, and this was related to last week's episode, we just didn't get to the question in time, but should you jump in and just play whatever the band started, or should you pull them back? I really am not a fan of pulling anyone back. Because the audience is going to hear you slow the entire thing down, and that's not a good thing. Like, no one in the audience cares that it's supposed to be 15 BPM slower. No one in the audience cares that your arms are on fire. So I would never do that. I would just make sure it doesn't happen again by counting my guitarist in and say, look, you just always start the song too fast. So I'm just going to start with, my left foot will be playing 2 and 4 while the singer's talking. You get used to that. And then you start the intro.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, mate. Because it just looks bad on you when you come in. It just makes you look really out of time.
It sounds like the drummer's dragging.
Yeah, exactly. So I would just do that, mate. I would just take control and just count in every single song. Even if it's just like an obvious 1, 2, 3, 4. Just see it as being rock and roll. Just take the lead, mate.
There's nothing wrong with like open hi-hat.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Let the guitarist go.
Yeah. I love your voice, Adam.
That's way better than... What's that?
His voice, mate. Cracks me up, man. So good.
Yeah. That dude's got a radio voice for sure. Yeah. All right, everybody. If you get a chance, head on over to patreon.com/drumwithmikeandeddie and please consider becoming a patron, because it really helps out this podcast so that we don't have to have commercials, which I really don't want to be sponsored by Manscaped. No. So if you could do that, that would be awesome. And then you can hang out with us this Sunday and we will get a little pad jam in and work out our hands. And Eddie and I will show you some of our favorite hand exercises and we'll just get all caught up. And Eddie and I had a talk behind the scenes about just getting this thing to be much more regular as far as the release times for you. So this podcast, after this week, we'll start launching every Sunday night so that you guys all, no matter where you live in the world, well, not where you live in the world, Australian, I'm sorry, it's over. Yeah. But for the UK and the US, you will have it on your Monday morning drive, because we want you just to have that. And we know how important it is for this podcast to be breaking it for you guys. So everyone, that was Storytime and Catch Up with Mike and Eddie. Episode 53 is in the can.
It's in the can, mate. There we go. Beautiful. I can't wait to see everyone on Sunday. So see you then.
I know, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Later, buddy.
See you in a bit, mate.